The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
To Bonner, to Bradley. Oh, well done to get that ball in. Oh, that's a fabulous equaliser from Cade Gordon.
So Jurgen's COVID-ravaged Reds advance in the FA Cup despite an early scare and Cade Gordon entering the record books as they make it through. So can Liverpool now make progress in two domestic cup competitions with a semi-final against Arsenal up next in the League Cup? I'm Steve Hoversall. This is the Red Agenda. James Pearce and Kiva O'Neill are on today's podcast. And it has been a week of absolute chaos on so many fronts, whether it be the training ground being shut, game being called off, COVID cases. Thankfully, though, Kiva ends on a positive.
Yeah, I mean, you felt like when Shrewsbury scored that, like, that was just sort of compounding the misery of the fan base almost and the confusion as well, because not a lot of us knew sort of what team was going to line up. You know, the club kept a little bit quiet on that front, I think, because, you know, there'd been sort of plenty of cases in the build-up to that game. And also Klopp said after the game there was false positives as well, which was interesting. Yeah, so I think Trent Alexander-Arnold in the end was the one who missed out. But yeah, I just think it was a nice story, wasn't it, that we got to see at Anfield, rather than the sort of craziness of particularly social media in the build-up to this game, which was just, I mean, unbearable at times, to be honest.
It wasn't a week to remember, was it? I reckon, James, I could have picked 10 lineups and I wouldn't have got the lineup that actually started that game. That was one of those fixtures where there was no way you were going to identify who was playing in this FA Cup game.
No, exactly. I don't think I'd ever gone to a Liverpool game not knowing what lineup we were going to see, because it you know, the preparations had been so ridiculous, hadn't they, with the training ground shut down for 48 hours, obviously the Carabao Cup tie at Arsenal having been postponed. We were expecting, well, knowing it would be a real mix of kind of experience and youth. And I think the big thing, probably, you know, like most people, when I saw the team sheet, I was actually reassured, because it was actually stronger than I thought it was going to be. And the thing that gave me the confidence was that, you know, you looked at that back line and, you know, three quarters of it was, you'd say, almost full strength, because there's probably not much between Konate and Matip. So, you know, when you see Van Dijk and Robertson in that back four as well, I think you knew that Liverpool were going to have the stability, especially with Fabinho sitting just in front. And most of the young players on display were kind of operating further forward. So, yeah, it was a, you know, in the end, it was a lovely routine victory to a pretty manic week, which I think everyone was more than happy to accept. You know, the alarm bells were obviously ringing after 20 minutes or so when Shrewsbury took that shot lead. But I like the way that the young players especially responded to that, because it could have been easy to have lost their composure a bit. But, you know, Liverpool quickly got themselves back in control. And yeah, the second half was a procession, really.
Hats off to Shrewsbury for the way they did take the lead. They put in a superb cross just before that. But that cross, that was a striker's dream, wasn't it, Kiva? And Daniel, is it Ado? Was in the right place to smash it home. And in what was a fairly quiet afternoon at Anfield, those Shrewsbury fans were brilliant, weren't they?
They went absolutely mad, didn't they, for that? And then his Ronaldo celebration as well. I thought probably Conor Bradley, who did have a good game at right back and was involved in a lot of the goals, he probably should have got a little bit tighter to his man on that. And then Konate didn't cover himself in glory as well, doing the same. Sort of left them with a bit too much space. But, you know, it was kind of nice to see in a way, because you sort of had the underlying feeling Liverpool are going to come back and win this, but let's sort of make a day of it. And that's kind of how it felt. Obviously, there was some worries that a cup upset might be on the cards, but it was the young lads that sort of started the comeback, wasn't it? And Klopp said that after the game, you know, that first goal, Cade Gordon, was pretty much built by the young players. Tyler Morton was involved. Obviously, Conor Bradley got the assist. Elijah Dixon Bonner was involved in the build-up as well. Cade Gordon taking his first goal as calm as he would take his 100th looking at him. Yeah, so just that was positive. And then, you know, to see Max Waltman, who had a difficult first half, sort of, you know, being Liverpool's number nine, he was feeding off scraps for the majority of that. To see him and Dixon Bonner chase the ball into the net to get it out, to, you know, take it to the halfway line and crack on. I love that sort of instilled in Liverpool right through, you know, the academy ranks, right through to the first team. And Klopp would have liked that as well, I think, just to have that hunger. You know, this was their day. Especially, like James said, in such a strong side as well. It was almost like, you know, we'll sort of be sturdy at the back and let's see what these kids can do. And they did all right.
Let's talk Cade Gordon then. And James, massive hype around the lad. I mean, superb finish, technically brilliant with both feet, really.
Yeah, it was a sensational goal, wasn't it? I think, as you said, the way that he shifted it, and when you watch the replays back as well, he was surrounded by defenders. He had no right to score from where he was there. But yeah, credit to Conor Bradley as well, because as Kiva said, he probably was found wanting a bit for the Shrewsbury opener, but I thought Bradley came back really, really strong after that and was excellent. You know, he was in the thick of things. You know, it was almost Trent-esque sometimes, you know, the way that he was marauding down that right. And he, you know, of course, he played a big part in Firmino's goal as well. But yeah, Gordon is just such an exciting talent, isn't he? I think he's the kind of player that he just gets supporters off their seats. He's just got that kind of X factor that is difficult to find in young players, because, you know, you can light up youth games and then get thrown into senior football and look like a fish out of water. But he looks the part, doesn't he? It's hard to believe he is only 17, because physically he handles himself. You can see he's got a great temperament. You know, even when things don't go, you know, great for him, he always wants the ball. He always wants to make things happen. And the biggest quality for an attacking player like him is that ability to finish and keep cool in situations, which, you know, and he epitomised that with the way that he took his goal, because he made something very difficult look incredibly easy. Yeah, great moment for him getting that standing ovation when he came off late on, and thoroughly deserved. It just kind of whets your appetite what he could go on to achieve at Liverpool.
Right, Kiva, you've written a piece with Cade's family, actually. It's probably going to be out by the time this podcast's out. So I think for all of us, we're just sort of wondering, you know, what do you do after a goal like that? How does a family react to it? What did they have to say?
Yeah, I chatted to Cade's older brother, Kellen, who plays for Mansfield Town. He's actually injured at the moment, because he would have been playing on Saturday, because Mansfield played. I think they might have got beat by Middlesbrough, perhaps. So, I mean, if they would have got through, that would have been interesting for the draw. But obviously, we know Liverpool have got Cardiff City now, and Mansfield are unfortunately out. But yeah, lucky enough that he was willing to chat late last night on his drive home from the mum's house in Derby. He lives nearby. So Cade actually went back with the family. Their uncle drove them. At the game was his mum, Joanne, their uncle, his two brothers, Keldon and Kellen. And they were in the Kenny Dalglish stand, and then his grandma and her husband was in the main stand watching on. So it was quite a family affair for Cade, and a proud day for them by all means. You know, speaking to his brother was just, I had goosebumps at times, because sometimes it's like, you know what a special moment it is for Cade to score at the Kop end, at Anfield, in the FA Cup, you know, to become the second youngest goal scorer in club history, like, at 17, just an amazing moment. But then to speak to, you know, the people who know him best, and, you know, his brother used to stick him in goal in the back garden and just pelt balls at him all day. And, you know, to see it then, you know, his brother is at Anfield watching his little brother score for Liverpool, you know, one of the biggest clubs in the world. It's just, you know, to hear all that emotion come across was incredible. And they seem quite chilled and quite relaxed, and sort of just, he takes it in his stride, Cade, by the sounds. And the only thing he said was that, like, Van Dijk and Robertson and all them kind of posting on Instagram, that was what he kind of mentioned, was like, that's quite cool. Like, but that's all he sort of, he didn't let on to anything else, like, as though, you know, I've become the set. He was just sort of like, yeah, cool. He said it's very much, you know, they go back to just being a family, because they are just a family. So it was just chatting about other stuff. And I think, you know, they got home and had just an ordinary meal of chicken, rice and vegetables. He said it wasn't nothing, you know, over the top, or he didn't get the bubbly out or anything like that, which I kind of think, you know, is a good thing. And, you know, they're sort of just taking it in the stride as a family. And Cade seems someone, you know, who is just very sort of relaxed about everything. And I asked the brother as well, because Kate gave his shirt away at the end, and I was like, I was, you know, sat in the main stand looking down, thinking, what's he doing giving his shirt away? He's just scored in that. Like, his, you know, Anfield debut, FA Cup debut, goal scoring debut. Like, what are you doing giving your shirt away? And his brother literally said the same. He was like, I said to him after the game, what are you doing? But he said, oh, someone was really asking me for it and I couldn't say no, and I would have felt bad going down the tunnel without giving it to them. And he said, that is the best way I can just describe him. Like, he wears his heart on his sleeve. He's just a good person. And, you know, he wouldn't have wanted to let that fan down, which I think, you know, is amazing, isn't it?
It is, yeah, but I don't get it. He's going to regret that, isn't he? If you're listening to this pod and you've got Cade's shirt, give it him back. The poor lad. I mean, in a moment of kindness to the fans, he obviously is a nice lad doing that, isn't he? But you've got to keep those mementos, haven't you, Kiva?
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure James has got a few of his shirts tucked away. Have you, James, some hat tricks at Anfield and whatnot?
I was just thinking, like 17 years old, scoring at the Kop End. I think my biggest achievement at 17 was managing to get into Joe Banana's nightclub with fake ID. That was like the pinnacle of my achievements as a teenager. So yeah, I might have had the luxury of doing that maybe with a few of those legends and press games over the years. But sadly, 54,000 empty seats for those rather than a full house. So. Yeah, I love the fact that he sounds like he comes from an amazing family, doesn't he? And we know with young players that is so, so important, because, you know, I go back to before even Trent had broken through into the first team. You spoke to Alex Inglethorpe, and he used to always bang on about how incredible Trent's family were, and Diane, especially Trent's mum, and how reassuring that was for the academy staff that he had such great people around him that, you know, that kept him focused on the things that mattered and away from the things that could possibly prove to be a distraction. Because, you know, there's been plenty of young players over the years who have come close and even broken into the first team at various points, but then disappeared off and not fulfilled their potential. And quite often, you know, that is because they haven't got great influences around them. You know, it certainly happened at Liverpool a few times I can think of. So that is a massive positive, because, you know, talent will only carry you so far in the game. You have to have that hunger, the drive, the application and the work ethic. And, you know, and when you're so young, you know, and you're suddenly, you know, in the spotlight, it can be difficult to deal with. So that's good to hear with Cade Gordon, that he certainly seems to have really good influences around him.
There's nothing more that Liverpool fans like than seeing a young striker come through, and we've had lots of them, your Fowlers, your Owens, but they don't all make it, as James sort of alluded to there, Kiva. But I got the sense from Jürgen and his comments after the game that he sort of expected to see many more big moments from Cade Gordon.
Yeah, I think, and Cade almost giving his shirt away felt to me like, I'm going to have loads more of those shirts. That was sort of the energy I got from it. And his brother did sort of agree with me there. Another thing his brother agreed on when I asked him was, you know, Klopp's quote at the end. Klopp had said, Cade has got adult finishing completely, you know, like his finishing ability is unreal, particularly on his left foot, which is his favoured foot. His brother laughed as well, a little sort of, it really come across as like brother rivalry almost. He was like, he was never taking that on his right foot. He was always going to take it on his left. He hasn't got a right foot. And I was laughing listening to that. But yeah, so Klopp after the game said, Cade's finishing as adult, but there's a lot of his game sort of still like a kid still. So he needs to sort of, you know, get those aspects of his game up a little bit. I think in the second half in particular, he did sort of drop in his performance. But we have to remember he has just had COVID as well and hasn't played for a long time. So you can sort of understand, you know, the adrenaline of the first half must have wore off as well in scoring. But yeah, I think there's still plenty more of things he can improve on. You know, his brother agreed with that as well, and you know, I think Kellen sounds like his biggest fan and his biggest critic, which is exactly what he'll need. And that's what Klopp said, you know, he wasn't hyping him up too much, and I think that's important, isn't it? Because, you know, you've seen with Harvey Elliott, it almost reminded me of Elliott against Everton in the FA Cup. I've told this story before, but my mum like pointed him out and was like, who's that kid? I think there would be a lot of people in the crowd yesterday who have never heard of Cade Gordon before. I mean, living under a rock, obviously, if you haven't, but they would have pointed him out and said, you know, who's that kid? And I think that's when you know you've got a special player on your hands, when, you know, people will pick him out and say, you know, who is he, and want to Google him immediately. So, yeah, I think he's definitely got a bright future, but again, a lot of work to do. to keep on keeping on. And, you know, obviously it'd be iron chances this month with AFCON, and obviously Salah's away, and with Arsenal coming up in the League Cup, it'll be one to be, you know, I assume once you've been around the match day squad, it must just be like the most amazing thing, and you must just want to be there. I spoke to Lloyd Jones, who used to be at Liverpool's academy, and the thing that stuck out for me speaking to him, he's at Cambridge now, was that he said, you know, I think he was on the bench for a game against Fulham in like 2013 under Brendan Rodgers, and he said it was the best weekend of his life. And that just sort of hit home, like how, you know, we sort of take for granted that, you know, the other players getting named to the bench yesterday would have been a massive day for them. And you know, other players who made the debut, like Frauendorf and Dixon Bonner. Yeah, just incredible, really, but still a lot of work to do. And how difficult it is to actually play for Liverpool is pretty clear to all of us, isn't it?
So many incredible youngsters showing lots of promise and given a chance in the last year and a half. And it almost makes you feel like Curtis Jones, James, is old now, doesn't it? When you see, you almost don't class Curtis within those young lads anymore. Now, he was playing as part of an attacking front three. I almost had to scrub my eyes at the start. I thought, and then halfway through, I was thinking, is this some sort of backup plan that Jürgen's masterminding as an option for games ahead?
Well, it's where he played a lot of his youth football, isn't it? I think anyone who, I remember watching him light up under 18 games when Steven Gerrard was his coach at the academy, and that was his position, left side of the front three. And we know as well, don't we, how much Klopp loves versatility, especially in his attacking players. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see him feature there again in the next few weeks, because I think Klopp has to be creative, doesn't he? Because he is depleted in that department with Salah and Mane away at AFCON. Obviously, Origi still missing at the moment. You know, good to see Minamino get minutes under his belt. That was obviously a concern when he was out as well. You know, that department was really down to the bare bones. So yeah, of course, you've got Jota to come back in. You know, Firmino getting his goal will help him as well kick on, hopefully. But yeah, I can see Jones playing more on that, you know, the left side of the front three. Obviously, he's got Oxlade as well, hasn't he, who can also play in the front three if required. You know, and I think we saw enough from Gordon as well to know that, you know, 100% I can see him having an impact off the bench. I think maybe it's too much to ask at the minute to throw him into starting Premier League games. You know, I just think he would be an absolute, you know, nightmare for defenders if you're talking about someone to bring on with 15, 20 minutes to go if you need a goal, because you know, as we said before, he has that ability to make things happen.
Just as Bobby Firmino was a nightmare when he was brought on towards the end of the game, wasn't he? The backheel finish, absolutely fantastic, Kiva. Now, that's what the fans turn up for. That's what they want to see from a Bobby.
That's what he turns up for, isn't it? Like, yeah, you know, just going to come on the pitch and score a backheel, probably with his eyes closed or something, because he's just a mad genius, isn't he? Seeing him score there, I was kind of thinking, this could be a big month for him to sort of reclaim, you know, the Firmino show almost and step up. And, you know, obviously there's no Salah and Mane, and just to sort of, you know, because with Jota having joined the club and sort of, he's, you know, taken Firmino's crown a little bit, hasn't he, at times. And, you know, Firmino's still a fantastically gifted footballer. He's just got something special about him. Something that I think, I know we know how special Salah and Mane are, but sometimes there's things Firmino can do on a football pitch that no one else can do. It's almost like his brain works in a different way. Kind of similar to maybe how Thiago passes the ball, how Firmino sort of thinks is just, you know, completely separate and different to how anyone else works. So yeah, to see him back and among the goals is great. And it was great to see Fabinho take a penalty. I enjoyed that so much because I've been waiting. I think they take one a few years ago in like pre-season and just fluffed it, and then like just never got to take one again. But at Monaco, he was the penalty taker. He was the main man. As I think they won Liga, was, you know, he was the guy taking the penalties. So that was one for the purists yesterday, seeing him step up. And then that angry finish right at the last second was just great. And it made me think, if Fabinho takes penalties and scores them, does that then give him more, like, just energy to score more goals? This could be a thing, because, you know, the midfield sometimes need to pick up the slack a little bit with the goal scoring, especially this month, you'd imagine. So more goals from Fabinho could be welcome. And maybe why Salah's not here, you know, any more penalties can go his way.
Yeah, only while he's not here. Try telling Mo that he's not on penalties, because Fab's taking them on. It was comfortable in the end. I tell you what was absolutely lovely to hear the story about how Van Dijk went in the away dressing room. And we perhaps, James, don't hear enough about that, do we? I'm sure other players have done it in the past, and we don't hear those stories. But what a sort of a gentlemanly thing to do, to go in to talk to the Shrewsbury players. We know for them that that's a massive moment, isn't it, to talk to Virgil van Dijk. Left his shirt in there with them.
Yeah, I mean, Van Dijk is an absolute class act, isn't he? And you think if you're those Shrewsbury players, that's a memory to cherish forever, isn't it? The fact that, you know, not only did you get to share a pitch with the best centre back in world football, but then he then took the time out afterwards to come in the dressing room and chat and all the rest of it. And I think, yeah, that would have meant a huge amount, because those Shrewsbury players still around from that tie 2 years ago. Of course, back then, the memory of coming to Anfield was probably soured slightly by the timing of it, because, of course, you know, the replay was scheduled within the inaugural Premier League winter break. It meant that Klopp wasn't there, the whole senior squad weren't there. They effectively played a Liverpool youth team, didn't they? So that was much more like a proper kind of Anfield experience for them yesterday, and it was nice to hear that mutual respect, you know, extended right the way through. I think the staff as well, listening to Steve Cotterill talking about how he felt they'd been welcomed with open arms by Liverpool, and, you know, they'd gone out of their way to make Shrewsbury, you know, enjoy the occasion as much as possible either side of the 90 minutes itself. So yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was there as a fan yesterday, took my lad along, and it was played in the right spirit. Shrewsbury, you know, I think they made it as difficult as they possibly could for Liverpool before the extra class and fitness told. But yeah, you know, Van Dijk, I thought Konate as well, you know, again, maybe, you know, not great on their goal, but he showcased again, you know, physically, you know, he's such an imposing presence back there. You know, it was, you know, the Shrewsbury front line weren't exactly lacking in size themselves, but it was men against boys at times, the way he was just swatting attackers aside like they were just kind of a annoying ants that he had to deal with. So yeah, and I think even for those senior players, sometimes you think those games almost get in the way and you're like, oh, you know, can't be doing with the third round of the FA Cup. But I think, you know, those senior players out there, they needed those minutes as well. You know, even, you know, right down to Andy Robertson coming back from his ban. You know, it's been a few weeks since he played. You know, Konate and Van Dijk as well. And even, you know, Fabinho, I don't think Fabinho had been anywhere near his normal commanding self in the recent league games. So, you know, hopefully getting those goals and swaggering through a game as he did will then have a really positive knock-on effect for Arsenal in the Carabao and then Brentford at home next weekend.
Yeah, so 10 years since Liverpool have won a domestic cup, of course, 2012 against Cardiff, who they've drawn, of course, in the next round of the FA Cup. 16 years since they won the FA Cup. Is this the season where there's a domestic cup coming home, Kiva? And there's a fair bit of anticipation for Thursday night, isn't there?
I bloody hope so, Steve. We've been waiting a long time, haven't we, for a proper cup final trip to Wembley. Obviously, Liverpool got to the League Cup final under Klopp, didn't they? Got beat by Man City. But that Coutinho goal's actually one of my favourite ever Liverpool goals in a, you know, in a stadium. I love that. Obviously, Liverpool then just didn't show up in the penalty shootout, which was awful. But yeah, when you actually look, and I know James did the piece on this, but it's actually just abhorrent that Liverpool have not really, like, almost bothered themselves in the cups for, like, such a long time. This is even before Klopp. You just feel like not bothered themselves, or just not, like, had sort of the, I don't know, the energy for it at times. Like, really, you want to be winning those cups, because for a long time Liverpool were not going to win the league and that kind of thing. Obviously, we know they're more of contenders now. But picking up trophies along the way is, you know, incredible. Like, to go all that time from 2012 winning the League Cup to 2019 winning the Champions League, like, you don't expect the Champions League to be your next trophy. You'd expect, you know, an FA Cup in there somewhere or something. And Liverpool have just hoovered up cups, you know, in the history of the club. So to go, you know, the past 22 years, when you actually look at it, is probably, you know, haven't probably won as much as they should have. Obviously, you know, everyone's got great memories from the treble season in 2001. under Gerard Houllier, and you know, it's sort of, that was my first memories of Liverpool almost, so I expected that every season then, and for it to not happen almost, you know, we've had great days, haven't we, but I think cups are just, there's something about them, and if Liverpool can, you know, if they don't manage to get there in the league and they don't manage to get there in the Champions League, but they somehow, you know, get to the League Cup and FA Cup final or win one of them or both of them, and I think that'll be a successful season, as long as obviously they're in the top four as well going into next season. We want cups, don't we? And I think we're all sort of at a point now where we're hungry for them as well, where I think even like last year and years gone by, we've, you know, maybe some of us have kind of thought, yeah, well, the focus should be on the Premier League, the Champions League, but now I'm like, no, just win it all. Win it all.
I almost can't wait for Thursday night. It feels like it should be a European night, James. How much will the manager be influenced in his team selection by the fact that Brentford's on Sunday? And actually, look, the Premier League race looks pretty hard, but it's not done and dusted. So how will that impact on what he's going to look at team-wise, and what sort of atmosphere are you expecting for Thursday?
Yeah, I think it'll certainly be a lot livelier than Anfield on Sunday afternoon when it was pretty quiet. I just think there's a lot more on the line, isn't there? And I would be amazed if Brentford is in Klopp's thinking in terms of holding anyone back. It's a cup semi-final. You know, when I wrote that piece last week, you know, I saw in the comments I was getting a bit of stick from people saying that I was almost trying to manage expectations, and people saying, well, you know, suddenly are we going back to top four and a decent run in the domestic cups equals success? And it was like, well, no, I'm not saying that. I actually wrote in it, you know, no one's conceding defeat in the Premier League title race, but, you know, and I don't see any reason why Liverpool can't win the Champions League this season. You know, they've got the talent there to do it, but the big but has to be City are absolutely relentless. Are they really going to drop enough points, and are Liverpool really going to put together the kind of run needed to bridge that gap? And as we know in the Champions League, in knockout football, anything can happen. There are no guarantees. So I just think it would be wrong to turn your nose up at the domestic cups this season. And I think there's a number of factors to that as well. I think, you know, this Klopp team and this manager are far, far too good to go a few years without winning something. You know, and as amazing as it was to win all those trophies in quick succession, you know, the Champions League, the Super Club, the Club World Cup and the Premier League, you know, it will be 2 years in June, July since they won the Premier League. And, you know, there were mitigating circumstances why they didn't add to it last season with the injuries. But it's important to keep creating history, and even, you know, the Wembley thing. It's been too long since Liverpool had a showpiece final at Wembley. So this semi against Arsenal does really matter, because I know when you're competing for Premier Leagues and Champions Leagues, you know, going out the cups early, you know, there is a bit of a shrug of the shoulders and say, but you know what, we've got bigger fish to fry. But I'm just not sure at the minute. I don't think Liverpool have got bigger fish to fry. You know, I think there is absolutely no reason not to regard this Arsenal semi-final as huge. You know, it's, you know, as you said, Steve, you know, 10 years since Liverpool won the League Cup. It would be 16 years in May since the Steven Gerrard FA Cup final, where Liverpool, that was the last time Liverpool won the FA Cup. So, yeah, it demands respect and it demands full attention. And also, the other thing that I wonder as well, maybe Liverpool are getting a slight change of luck now with some of the draws, because, you know, getting Cardiff at home in the next round is a decent draw. Shrewsbury at home in the previous round was a decent draw, which, you know, has been one of the reasons why Liverpool's recent record in the FA Cup has been so miserable. Because not only has Klopp made loads of changes and played kids and fringe players, but also Liverpool have had some really, really tough draws over that period. So maybe this season, hopefully, is the season that they put things right in terms of those domestic cups.
Although they've not had the luck in terms of the home leg being the first leg now. How much of an advantage have they conceded there, do you think, Kiva? We know how much Liverpool like playing at home in the second leg of two-legged ties.
Yeah, I said this, that you've just got to win it in that first game, then haven't you? Put it to bed. I feel like Chelsea have almost done that pretty much with their 2-0 win over Tottenham. You've got to win it at home, I guess, either way, haven't you? So for Liverpool to, you know, take a 2-0 lead or even more into the second leg, then I think they stand in good stead to advance to the final. If it's not quite the game and it's 0-0 or something like that, then you'd still fancy them away at Arsenal. But having been to that Leicester game, and, you know, for Liverpool to be 3-1 down and just looking a bit woeful in that first half, and then to just come back 3-3 and then win on penalties, you know, Anfield was special that night, and it can be special again, will be special again. So yeah, I'm trusting the, you know, it's Thursday's going to almost be like Champions League vibes, because Leicester in the League Cup was, and I'm assuming Arsenal in the League Cup will be as well.
That's what we want. Right, let's give a shout at the end of this pod to a piece that James has written on the goalkeeping department and the idea of building a goalkeeping school. So recently, of course, they added Claudio Taffarel to the squad of keeper coaches. You're thinking to yourself, how big does this squad need to be? But John Achterberg's explained it all to you, James. It seems like a fairly good setup.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it was John Achterberg's always great value, and it was nice to spend some time with him, because I was just interested to find out how it is all working with Taffarel. I think it's 6 weeks since the Brazil legend was added to Klopp's backroom staff, and of course I think around that time people were thinking, well, what does this actually mean for John Achterberg? Obviously, he's been Liverpool's senior goalkeeping coach since 2011, but yeah, he explained that, you know, he is fully on board with this, and also kind of why Liverpool do need three goalkeeping coaches, because of course, you know, he's got Jack Robinson as well assisting him. And actually, when you kind of drill into the detail, you can see why they do need that number, because, you know, he said they've got six keepers training at the AXA training centre on a daily basis around the senior setup. And of course, when you've got John and Jack travelling to all the games and they're only taking three keepers with them, well, the other three need someone to stay behind and train them. You know, it's still very much Achterberg in charge of the department, and then they're just embracing the wealth of experience that Taffarel has. That, you know, obviously he has a close bond with Alisson from their work together with the Brazilian national team. So at the minute it's very much kind of Alisson with obviously Kelleher, who I thought did very well again against Shrewsbury, as the number two, Adrian as number three, and then behind them you've got Karius, who, you know, still expecting that something might happen in terms of him leaving the club this month. You know, Achterberg said himself, you know, he needs to go. You know, he needs to go and get his career back on track elsewhere. If it doesn't happen this month, then it will happen in the summer, because he's out of contract. And then you've got young teenagers, you know, Marcelo Pitaluga, the Brazil youth international, and Harvey Davis from the Chilwell area, Liverpool, who they're really, really excited about Davis in terms of his big potential. You know, I think the other interesting thing that Achterberg talked a fair bit about that ties in with what you said, Steve, about wanting to create a proper goalkeeping school, is that Liverpool have had to change their strategy in terms of recruiting goalies, because, you know, we all know that in recent years they've brought in a host of keepers at kind of 15, 16, 17. Poland has been a real kind of hotbed in terms of scouting and bringing in players from there, the Czech Republic as well, but that avenue is no longer open to them with Brexit. You know, you can no longer sign under 18s from overseas, so that means that you have to bring through your own keepers to a greater degree. And so that's why, you know, your scouting and the quality of your coaching and the planning has to be absolutely, you know, top notch. Yeah, fascinating the amount of detail that goes into it, right down to, you know, the tests they do to try and determine whether a 10, 11-year-old talented goalie is going to have the physicality and the height to one day be able to handle the physical environment. Because, you know, as John Achterberg said, you know, it's, you know, they're not a charity. It's a professional football club. And you don't want to give fake, you know, kind of false hope to these kids and their parents. So
I saw that on your piece. Is it? So they used to measure their wrist to scans. See how
yeah,
tall
used to,
they'd
yeah, essentially do scans on
scan
a...
Scan their wrist.
Yeah, yeah, the... And he was saying that Liverpool no longer do that. I think the doctor felt it was probably a bit unethical in terms of, you know, having to probably subject kids to the radio waves, I guess. I guess it can't be massively scientifically accurate. But he said, you know, other clubs still do it. He said that they work with the university on various other measurements, and, you know, right down to basic things like looking at a kid's parents, whether they, you know, whether realistically they're going to have the height to one day do it. Because he said, you know, of course now with Brexit, it means that, you know, if you suddenly get to the under 16s, under 18s, and the keepers you've been working with, you know, haven't developed and they're not going to be physically capable of delivering at that level, then Liverpool no longer have that avenue to go and recruit from overseas. So while on the one hand you think Liverpool's goalkeeping department looks pretty sorted for years to come, with, you know, Alisson arguably coming just into his peak at the age of 29, and he's still got, I think he got 5 years, I think, left on his contract, and, you know, he could go on for another 10 years, I think, because he's, I mean, he is such an elite goalkeeper. And you've got Kelleher, which I don't think anyone's got a better number two than Quirin Kelleher. But, you know, Liverpool are looking well and truly to the future in terms of trying to ensure that that production line of young keepers is there and that they create their own rather than having to go and buy them.
Really good piece. If people haven't read it out there, check it out. It's on The Athletic now. We've got to mention this before we finish the pod. Liverpool women, absolutely unbelievable again yesterday, keeping a bang in the goals in, aren't they? Rachel Furness, who we had on the show recently, scored a couple, and a hat-trick hero as well.
Yeah, Leanne Kiernan can't stop scoring goals. Obviously, we mentioned on the last podcast, Liverpool have signed an American striker, Katie Stengel. And obviously, it's made Leanne Kiernan sort of stamp a mark down. So she just scored a hat-trick in 6 minutes. Six-minute hat-trick, ridiculous. And one of the goals is just unbelievable. And obviously, Furness comes on, scores with a first touch and then scores another. So yeah, nice 6-0 win, which was started off by the captain, Niamh Fahey, a bullet header, I believe. Obviously, I was at Anfield, so was unable to watch the game. But I think the 5 points clear at the top of the championship now and things are boding really well for them in terms of getting promoted back to the WSL, because it's a tough gig, you know, it's a tough ask. It's just one team that goes up. And obviously last year they missed out to Leicester and just felt like a really tough time. Obviously, Vicky Jepson left the club. They were without a manager pretty much for the majority of the second half of the season. Obviously, Amber Whiteley was in charge. Now they've got Matt Beard, who's obviously, you know, won two leagues in his last stint at Liverpool and looks on course to do another.
Absolutely brilliant from them. Omens look good. Fingers crossed that they go all the way. Thanks for listening to the pod. Red Agenda returns at the end of the week after that Arsenal game. Can't wait for that. Many thanks to Kiva and James. We'll see you next time.